Coming up next, another edition of Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd, president of Teamsters Local 237.
Welcome to another edition of Reaching Out. I'm Gregory Floyd, president of Local 237 Teamsters. With me, my very special guest is Bill Baccalini. He is the CEO of the Foundling, which is formerly the Founding Hospital up into this year. And he's going to tell us about the former Foundling Hospital, now the Foundling, and the concept of how that got changed. Bill, welcome to Reaching Out.
A pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
So I want you to tell us, one, about the Foundling Hospital, because a lot of people are used to that name, and then going to the Foundling.
Yeah, back in 1869, when the sisters first put a little a crib out on the doorstep on East 12th Street, not far from here, it was known as the New York Foundling Hospital. A year later, it moved right around the corner to Washington Square Park. And then the home that a lot of New Yorkers know was up on 68th and 3rd Street. And we changed the name from the New York Foundling Hospital to just the New York Foundling now, because what we do is really not hospital work. We, for many, many years, operated a pediatric skilled nursing facility. But the needs of the kids got so acute that we needed to change. The care needed to get more sophisticated. And so a new corporation, we separated, a new corporation was founded. It became the Elizabeth Seton Pediatric Center, and they have a beautiful, beautiful home up in Yonkers, New York, where they care for some very, very medically compromised children.
So what did the Foundling Hospital used to do?
Well, the Foundling Hospital and the Foundling, really, we do the same thing, with the Foundling Hospital having done some more medical work, but this confusion is the reason why we now call it the New York Foundling. The New York Foundling today, and for actually quite frankly, for many, many years, was known as a big child welfare agency. A lot of adoption, a lot of foster care, a lot of what we now call preventive services in New York City. So we are at this point about a $200 million a year organization, 3,000 staff. We provide the full range of child welfare services and juvenile justice services in the city, as well as providing residential care to developmentally disabled adults.
Now, where is the Foundling located? Where are your headquarters, and where are some of your sites?
Okay, so our headquarters are on 16th and 6th. I guess Flatiron, Chelsea, I don't know exactly. I guess the Flatiron District. We're one of the few agencies that has an office in every borough in the city. So we're located throughout the city. We're one of ACS's largest providers. I think we're their third or fourth largest foster care provider. We're their largest preventive services provider. So we have a spot, and we have medical clinics and mental health clinics throughout the city. So we're pretty spread out in that sense. Additionally, we provide Head Start services to 1,500 families in Puerto Rico. So we've been in Puerto Rico for about 45 years at this point, and because of the storm, it's taking increasingly more and more of our attention.
So tell us about your operations in Puerto Rico.
They're great. They're a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful people. I think the island certainly has its complications, and to my mind, will continue to have its complications. But the people are just a beautiful, humble, proud people. So we provide early Head Start and Head Start services to 1,500 families on the island. We go as far south as Cuomo. We go as far west as Vega Alta. And we're largely concentrated in the greater San Juan area across 45 different sites in Puerto Rico. So we have a pretty big operation. It's about a $15 million budget with about 400 staff in Puerto Rico.
Now, is Puerto Rico the only location outside of New York that you operate in?
The only one that we actually operate. We do a lot of consulting. We do consulting work in Australia. We do consulting work in Georgia. We do consulting work in Missouri, trying to get these jurisdictions to implement evidence-based practices. So we do a lot of consulting, but Puerto Rico is the only direct operation that outside of the U.S.
Okay. Now, how has your mission changed since the early stages of Foundling?
Well, I don't think the mission has changed. What's happened, I think, Greg, is our response to the needs of the day. The sisters prided themselves in just not only responding to the needs of the day and thus the cradle in dirty, grimy New York City in 1869, and by 1993, already 10,000 children had been placed in the care of the city. Of the sisters, not of the city, of the sisters. And so what happens is over time, the sisters pride themselves in being responsive to the needs of the day and anticipating the needs of the day. So that's what we continue to do to this day. We try to look 5 to 7 years out. What is the system? What are the kids and the families most likely to need going forward as opposed to looking backward?
Okay. So tell us about some of the different programs that you have. You mentioned foster care, you mentioned pre-K. Are there other programs that you provide?
Yeah, we've, I think over the last few years, and we're going to double down on this going forward, on education. And here's our belief at the Foundling. Above, obviously, the foundation of any child welfare system is to keep kids safe. But beyond keeping kids safe, we believe our greatest obligation to them is to educate them. And so we have very aggressively gone into the education space over the last 5 to 10 years. We still operate the only one of its kind charter school in the South Bronx for children in the child welfare system. We are hoping others replicate it, but no one has yet. And we're actually saying, please come look at our model and replicate it, because kids who have experienced the trauma of family separation, their educational journey, Greg, is much, much different than a child who might not have experienced that. And there are great consequences of trauma for the educational journey. In addition to that, we're very, very discouraged at the high school graduation rate here in the city for kids in foster care. Only about 22% of the kids who age out of care in New York City will actually have a high school degree. Think about that.
22%.
22%. That's a little bit more than 1 in 5, Greg. So let me paint this picture for you. Not only are only 1 in 5 have a high school degree, but they really don't have any source of family support, because if they've aged out of foster care, they probably don't have a rich family background that they can lean on. And here we are waving goodbye to these young people, expecting them to make critical decisions about what their rest of their life's journey is going to look like, with 1 in 5 having a high school degree and only 3% ever graduating from college. So what we've done is, in partnership with a couple of other child welfare agencies, we've actually gotten the city council funding for a program called Fair Futures. And what Fair Futures is going to do is it's going to extend supports for these kids until age 26 by assigning coaches to them. People that they can pick up the phone and ask, should I move here? Should I move there? Oh, I'm dating Mary. What do you think about this? Or how should I spend my vacation time? Or should I take this job or that job? Or should I move jobs? These are things these kids, gosh, I couldn't have made those decisions by myself at age 21 or 22. I had parents to lean on. These kids don't have that. And so we're going to assign coaches. In addition, though, there's not much help a coach is going to be if only 1 in 5 of these kids have a high school degree and only 3% of them graduate from college. So what we're also going to do is we're going to assign as early as the 6th grade to every child in foster care a one-on-one tutor, and that tutor is going to stay with them. Now, there's a couple of why this model? This model's been tested. It's evidence-based. There's a few of us who have had implemented variations on this already in the city. The Foundling, as has Graham Windham, as has HeartShare, we've moved our high school graduation rates to about 90% through a very focused tutoring and coaching model. And this is what we intend to take citywide. And we're very, very appreciative of the City Council, the administration, for supporting it this year. This will be our first year of it going citywide. And all the agencies are very, very excited about this opportunity. In addition, besides the charter school, we're this Fair Futures, we're also, and with CUNY and ACS as our partners, we are supporting 125 young people in foster care attending one of the CUNY colleges and residing on a CUNY campus. And so we hire the back in my day, they used to be called resident assistants. Mm-hmm. Now we call them coaches. But they're actually living in the dorms with the kids. The kids all have tutors, and we're getting these kids through college. We have to get these kids first high school degrees and then on to college, or you know what, their future is not going to be bright.
Right, right, right. Now, a lot of people don't think of CUNY as having dorms.
Yeah, yeah.
So I know a few campuses have dorms.
Exactly.
But a lot of people don't think of CUNY as having dorms.
Right. Well, you raise a good point. So let me tell you the places where we are. We're at Queens College.
Yes.
They have dorms.
I know they have dorms.
And we're at City College. They have dorms. But we're supporting kids at John Jay. And while John Jay doesn't operate the dorms, they bring in a for-profit provider. Actually, this one's in old hotel space.
Okay.
And that's the dorm. So for even for the CUNY schools that don't have dorms, there's a lot of private providers of dorm space. So we're getting these kids through college. And that's critical. So we're doing a lot of stuff in the education world. We have a very, very rich individualized to every kid in the foundling and foster care gets a one-on-one tutor. We started with the support of the Hilton Foundation. They were very, very generous to us. And so we think we're starting to change the conversation here in New York that education, beyond safety, education is our number one obligation to these kids.
Now, I remember going back maybe 20 years ago. There used to be a hospital on 16th. And
St. Vincent's. Not on 16th and 6th, but a couple blocks down, 13th.
Was there a
St. Vincent's?
A foundling? No, was there ever a foundling hospital?
Well, no, that's where we are now, and it was called the Foundling Hospital,
right.
And we had that skilled nursing facility operated, the one I told you about that's now in Yonkers.
Okay.
They operated on the first six floors.
Okay.
And the kids' needs just got so acute that we had to move them out, built a new place in Yonkers, and now it's known as Elizabeth Seton Pediatric Center.
Yeah, see, I knew there was a hospital
there. Was.
And there were
was.
Children, because I remember the union partnered with them one year for around Christmas time, and we went there, and we brought toys.
Toys
and
Santa Claus showed up on the front.
So I said, what happened to that?
That's in Yonkers, an executive part in Yonkers. And I'll tell you what, you want to tell a story, you should visit Elizabeth Seton Pediatric Center in Yonkers. It's just unbelievable what they do for kids who are very, very, very medically challenged.
Wow. So talk a little bit about that. Is that still connected with you, or is it a separate organization?
A decision was made, and I think a good decision, and it predates my arrival here, but I think a very sound decision. Because foster care and preventive services and Head Start and juvenile justice, because that's so dramatically different than actually running a hospital.
It is.
Running a hospital, a decision was made to break off the corporations. And so Elizabeth Ann Seton Pediatric was created, and they provide the medical care.
So there's a confusion.
Yeah.
That's why it's no longer a hospital. That's why you're the foundling. I'm Gregory Floyd, president of Local 237 Teamsters. With me, a very special guest, CEO Bill Baccalini of the Foundling, not formerly as the Foundling Hospital, but a lot of us remember the Foundling Hospital, but we're talking about the Foundling and the organization. You just recently had a reunion weekend at the Foundling in June. Can you tell us what that was about and who showed up?
Oh, my God, you talk about a moving and humbling weekend. It was the first weekend in June, and this being our 150th anniversary, we're celebrating it in a couple of different ways. So June 6th, 7th, and 8th, Thursday afternoon, it all started with a mass at St. Patrick's Cathedral, followed by a reception. And at this reception, we had folks attending the actual great, great, great nieces and nephew of Sister Mary Irene, the woman who first opened the doors of the Foundling in 1869. They came to our reception that kicked off the reunion weekend. Friday was a conference day that we held at NYU where old foundlings came back to tell their story or to learn more about their history. And a big part of that, Greg, was I'm sure you've heard about the orphan trains, whereas in the late 1800s, because New York City was, as you and I discussed before, a difficult place and families couldn't care for their kids. And the thought of the day was, let's get these kids out of this dirty, grimy city and into the country. Well, we had descendants of orphan train riders attend the reunion. And one woman, I tear up thinking about this. One woman actually carried with her the little shoes, the booties that her mother wore, and socks that her mother wore on the orphan train back in, I think it was 1891, 1892. We then had a formal session by the head of the Orphan Train Association. She came and did a presentation and had everybody. You know, the Foundling was a big part of the Orphan Train, as was the Children's Aid Society here in the city. It was just a fantastic, fantastic conference. It culminated Saturday. We closed 16th Street between 5th and 6th Avenue, welcomed all of our neighbors from the community, and it had an outdoor bazaar with bands. Our band from our performers from our charter school, Haven Academy, performed, and many of the folks who attended the conference on Friday stayed around to see that. Wow, the Foundlings changed. That same Foundling in 1869 that gave start to my mother's life. Quite frankly, it's changed and it looks a little bit different. So we had intergeneration. It was a great, great party on Saturday. Then in October, on October 2nd, we're celebrating our 150th with a gala at the Plaza. We have historically not been big gala people. We're more casual and more informal. But because it's the 150th, and we search for a place. We said, geez, the Plaza has been such a big part of New York City's history, as has the Foundling. Let's bring them together. And so on October 2nd, we'll culminate the year's celebration with our gala at the Plaza.
Well, since you mentioned it, for those who are listening who want to attend the gala, how can they do that?
Go on our website, www.nyfoundling.org. You'll be able to purchase tickets or sponsor it. Listen, if you're listening to this, and I know many people listen to your show, Greg, if you're listening and know that you have some tie to the Foundling, please, this is the year to reach out to us. This is the year to celebrate all that has come before us and get us ready to face tomorrow. You know, government doesn't pay 100% of the cost. We have to go out and raise $5 to $7 million every year to make the bottom line and to make ends meet. So, you know, I ask those listeners with some tie to us or just a commitment to the kids and families, the kids and families of this city, let's make sure that the Foundling is here for generations to come.
Now, is this a black tie event or is just...
No, it's not. Okay. Again, because we're more informal, casual, it's business attire, but we're not requiring a black tie.
Now, you mentioned a charter school.
Yes.
Tell us about this school, the charter school, and tell us, it's located, I'm assuming, 16th Street?
No. The charter school's in the South Bronx.
South Bronx.
We're right into the teeth of needs. We're on 136th and Brown Place in Mott Haven. And let me tell you, Mott Haven's changing, but we invested in Mott Haven before anybody was investing in Mott Haven. We built a school co-located with all of our child welfare offices in the Bronx on that corner some 10 years ago. In fact, this year we're celebrating our 11th anniversary. And so it's a school that was specifically designed for kids and families involved in the child welfare system. And I've the vitriol that has just defined the relationship between the charters and the regular public schools, I've had enough of it. Charter schools are there. They should be there. In the right world, they're there as laboratories. I'm not looking to open 50 charter schools. I'm looking to learn from the one we've opened, critically evaluated, critically studied, so that others, maybe it'll inform. I saw charter schools as the laboratory for the greater public schools. Before she left office, Chancellor Farina visited us because she had said that, you know, a lot of our schools are starting to look like Haven Academy. Are there lessons you've learned? Yes, there are lessons. We have to keep that conversation going so that places like Haven Academy can help the general public schools educate kids who have been traumatized. And we can't forget that. They may look the same on the outside, Greg, but kids who have been separated from families have a trauma that their educational journey is not going to be as linear as perhaps yours was, or, well, mine wasn't, but it's a different journey. And we have to recognize this if we're really going to reach them.
So who are the students that are in that charter school?
Okay.
How does one get to that charter school?
Well,
tell me.
Okay, so,
tell me the
so because we set this up in such a way as to answer, so that we'd be able to answer some very fundamental questions, a third of each incoming class is made up of kids who are currently in foster care. A third of each incoming class are kids whose families are currently receiving preventive services. and a third of each coming class, each incoming class, are for kids from the general Motthaven community. We set it up like that so we could answer some questions. Does it do better for one? Do the kids from one population perform better than others? What's the impact that one population has on the other populations? And we've learned an awful lot through our 10 years. And the fact of the matter is, educating kids who have been traumatized in this way requires a different approach. And we've shared it. I mean, you know, we get a lot of visitors to the school, and it's a model that others are worth, other cities it'd be worth their while to take a look at.
So just tell us what you've learned with mixing. You had the third, and
I'm gonna plead some ignorance in this. I was, and I'm a little embarrassed to say this. You'd think if I was gonna get folks to invest $30 million in a community, I would have known some of the answers to the questions, but I didn't. So we had a couple of concerns, or a couple of questions. Could a model like this keep kids from, who are in preventive services, from going into foster care? The answer so far is yes, to a degree. More importantly, would we negatively impact the education of the third, that's the general community kids, by putting them in a school where the focus primarily, because two-thirds of the kids are in the child welfare system, where the focus is largely on them? And the answer is an unequivocal no. In fact, Greg, our kids from the general community, the third that come from the general community, outperform all of the other comparison groups, other charters, other district schools, other public schools. They perform them on every possible metric you can look at. So we're making a difference. Let me tell you this: the kids in the child welfare system at Haven perform much better than the kids that the Foundling cares for in child welfare that don't get to attend Haven. So Haven's onto something, and the city and the state recognize that, and more we're getting an opportunity to talk about our model.
So I noticed the parameters of your school, there isn't any testing that's going into attending your charter school.
Lottery. It's just all a lottery. Within each one of those slivers, it's just a pure lottery.
Okay, it's a lottery system.
It's three different lotteries. But it's a lottery system.
Okay, so it's different than the other charter schools that cherry pick who they want to come
in. I don't want to get into it. Well, I can only speak for us. I don't think.
Yeah, I'm speaking for you.
Okay,
I'm not speaking for you.
There's no cherry picking going on now. Right. I mean, but I don't. I think that's been overstated too. My own view is that that's been overstated to describe the charter. You know what? When you look at the charter schools generally, and you look at the non-white kids that comprise this charter school, I actually think you'd have a hard argument arguing that cherry picking is going on. But let me move off that and let others fight that fight. Sure. I'm just not in agreement with it.
Right.
At our school, you can ask the DOE, you can ask the state educator. We educate the kids that the city and the state have had the hardest time educating. Those kids, and here's why, Greg, and I understand it, it's logical. The kids in the child welfare system, they tend to, in the general public school space, they tend to attend the most marginal schools, and then the most marginalized kids in those marginalized schools. That doesn't portend much for success. We recognize that because we're child welfare experts, and we open this school. We've tested the idea. The idea works. We're hoping others will take us up on it, and this becomes the norm rather than the exception.
Wow. I mean, I learned something. I learned something, and I appreciate you coming on this show.
Man. Thank you very much for having us.
We have 30 seconds. I just want you to tell us about your gala again on October
2nd. Please reach out to us. We're having a great gala. There'll be a lot of surprise celebrity guests. October 2nd at the Plaza, www.nyfoundling.org. Visit our website, buy a ticket, sponsor it, because we have to make sure that tomorrow is brighter than yesterday for the children and families we serve.
I'm Gregory Floyd, President, Local 237 Teamsters. A very special guest was Bill Baccalini, President and CEO of New York Foundling. Thank you for listening. We'll be right back.
Thanks for listening, and don't forget to tune in again each and every Saturday at this same time for another edition of Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd, president of Teamsters Local 237. The preceding pre-recorded program paid for by Teamsters Local 237.